Welcome to The Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Michael.
What story do you have today?
Michael, here's a story from an author who's going to appear at the Miami International Book Fair. His book is called Bad Guys, Bullets, and Boat Chases, True Stories of Florida Game Wardens, and his name is Bob Lee.
As a former Florida game warden, my most unusual case turned out to be one of the biggest environmental busts in Florida history. That was when Amtrak Passenger Trains was dumping their poop upon unsuspecting anglers fishing beneath the Buffalo Bluff Railroad Bridge crossing the St. John's River. Now, this is up in the area about 5 miles south of Palatka, which is roughly midway between St. Augustine and Gainesville. This case took up 14 months of my life, and it began in the spring of 1988 and ran to the fall of 1989. Now, I like to think of it as a David and Goliath story, Goliath being the United States, then supporting Amtrak to the tune of $600 million a year, and David being myself, the lone investigator, and one young prosecutor freshly graduated from the University of Florida Law School. His name was Dennis Bear, and I don't think poor Dennis had ever handled a jury trial when this massive case was dumped in his lap. Now, the reason he was selected to be the prosecutor, even though he was new, was because he had a minor degree in marine biology, and he had been an advocate for environmental causes ever since he was a teenager. And even today, he's in his 50s, you'll find him at the crack of dawn patrolling the beaches along Flagler Beach, checking on the sea turtle egg nest. And then by 8 o'clock, he'll be at his law firm on A1A, which is the beach road. Now, the first time I ever set eyes on Dennis, I thought to myself, well, now, if this case goes to a jury trial and it's composed mostly of women, regardless of the quality of the evidence presented, I believe we will prevail. Because in the probably the terminology of some of the female listeners out there, he'd be pretty buffed out. Now, to help illustrate this a little farther, Dennis took the University of Florida surfing team to the national championships in 1985. Now, as one might imagine, Dennis and I had many strategy sessions to try to work out the problems on this case and how we would investigate it and then prosecute it. During one of our first meetings, we're in the basement of the Putnam County Courthouse, and Dennis is sitting in his swivel chair. He's leaned back, his collar's unbuttoned, his tie is loosened, and he's reeling off a list of things for me to do from kind of a mental Rolodex in his head. And I am sitting on the other side of the desk with a legal pad taking notes. Everything was going swimmingly well until he leaned forward, kind of projecting more importance, and said to me, Bob, he said, you have to come up with a victim. And I thought to myself, well, now, in order for me to come up with a victim, the stars would have to be in alignment, the seas would have to part, the sun would have to shine brightly. I would have stood just as good a chance of coming up with a victim as I would winning the Florida State Lottery. Thus, I began 3 months of stakeouts crouched in the bushes on the southern embankment of the Buffalo Bluff Railroad Bridge every day watching Amtrak trains cross back and forth. On what would be the final month and the last day, I heard a northbound Amtrak train approaching, and as it got closer, I could hear that telltale clickety-clack, clickety-clack as those steel wheels hit those jointed tracks. And then suddenly the train rushed across the bridge. Now, when you go to watch a train, you cannot watch the whole train at once. You can only watch one car at a time. So it's a lot like going to a skeet range and shooting one clay pigeon at a time as it rises into the air. So I watched each car passing, one, two, three, four, five. And then on the fifth car, I finally saw it. A huge spray of human liquefied waste shot out from underneath, and directly below was a 16-foot runabout with two couples fishing. I was so excited. My stakeout was finally done. Now, I would never wish ill will upon my fellow man, but somebody had to make the ultimate sacrifice. I scrambled up that rocky embankment, ran across the railroad bridge trestle until I was directly above the boat, which was tied off to a concrete pylon about 20 feet below. And then I asked the question, did anybody get sprayed? A woman in her early 70s, seated in the bow, of petite size, sitting erect, with her white hair perfectly done up, pointed with one perfectly polished fingernail at some red and brown spots on her light blue pantsuit. Mary Trammell would later tell a New York Times reporter that she would never again fish underneath the Buffalo Bluff Bridge unless she had an Amtrak train schedule in one hand and an umbrella in the other. Now, the case did go to trial in November of 1989, and Mary did testify, and she was on the second day of the trial. It was a Tuesday. So important was her testimony that Dennis, the prosecutor, called me up and asked me if I wouldn't pick her up from her house and transport her to the courthouse. We didn't want to risk a mechanical breakdown or something like that impeding her ability to testify. And she testified very well in the southern genteel charm of the lady that she was. Now, we won the case in state court, lost it in federal court. Now, I'm not going to worry the listeners with the minutia of why we lost it, but here's what's important. The case wound its way through Congress and ended up in the lap of President Bush number one, November of 1991. Ultimately, the United States government paid $85 million to retrofit 544 rail cars with new holding tanks. And today, Amtrak doesn't poop anywhere or on anybody in the United States.
Bob Lee with a story about catching Amtrak in the act.
In the act of pooping, yes. I mean, let's just call it what it is.
This was, according to Bob, a common practice that was done all over the country, and thanks to him, it's not being done anymore.
Well, at least we hope it's not being done anymore. At least it's not being done in that area. I mean, who knows what they're doing out there in the wild? And that's part of his story, is that he's working outside of the civilization as we know it, outside of society. And that's what's so fascinating about this story. Yeah, of course, there are human beings who are there fishing, including this woman he describes so beautifully with her perfectly coiffed gray hair, and she's petite, and she's got a polished fingernail, and she's got a little bit of poop on her. most of us are blissfully unaware of the poop that is flying back and forth in our wilderness. And this is a man who's bringing this front and center, not literally, thankfully, but this topic front and center and telling us that, you know, he won. He did something about it. He calls it one of the biggest environmental busts.
He acted like a real, I mean, he is a real police officer. He was on a stakeout trying to find evidence.
And I love the way he says the odds against finding a victim were similar to the odds against winning the lottery. I hope that day, the last day of his stakeout, when he found those people who were victimized by Amtrak, I hope he went out and bought a lottery ticket. And this is the kind of story that obviously wouldn't be a story if it happened all the time. This is the kind of story that a man might wait his whole career. And it happened. And it's just marvelous.
He did say it was comparable to David and Goliath.
Well, it's the little guy, for lack of a better term, pooped on by the big guys. And this happens to people all the time. And those stories, that genre of story, and this is why the story of David and Goliath from the Bible is still so prominent in our heads that we use it as a metaphor. These stories are still, of course, with us and are probably going to be with us till the end of time, that the big and the powerful take advantage of the small and the weak. And every once in a while, the small and the weak wins, and that is great cause for celebration.
He sounds like such a seasoned storyteller, and he told it very nicely.
Absolutely, and he used so many wonderful techniques. I have to say, as a feminist, that when he said that the prosecuting attorney, he'd have to say that if there were, I think he said something like if there are women on the jury, they would all agree with him and vote the way he wanted them to because he was so buffed out. I have to say that was slightly offensive to women, but as a storyteller, he did such a wonderful job. Instead of saying he was very handsome or he was buffed out, he gives this whole long explanation of how women would react if he were the prosecutor on a case, just like you would like to think that men on a jury would vote a certain way, not based on what the witness looked like or the prosecutor looked like, but based on the case that person presented. He did so many wonderful things. He said clickety-clack, clickety-clack, which is the onomatopoeia, using the words for the sounds. He talked about this prosecutor at great length, the leaning back in the swivel chair, the tie undone, then the leaning forward in the swivel chair. I mean, he really got everything so detailed. And I loved the point, you can't see the whole train at once, which is kind of obvious, but who thinks about that? So he says, the cars go by, one car, two cars, three cars. Instead of just saying a lot of cars went by, he makes us sit through those cars as if we are really experiencing this story. That's a great storyteller. One car, two car, three cars, four cars, five cars. That was just terrific. So I'm sure that Bob's book captures a lot of his wonderful storytelling techniques as well. But it was such a pleasure to listen to this, even if the climax of the story was, as he puts it, human liquefied waste spray. I gotta tell you, Michael, I have never enjoyed a story about human liquefied waste spray quite as much.
Well, imagine how thrilled Bob was when he saw that. Thanks for bringing that story in, Karen.
Bob Lee will be presenting his book at Miami Book Fair International Sunday afternoon, November 19th at 1:30.
If our listeners have a South Florida story they'd like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email to cneile, that's C-N-E-I-L-E, at fau.edu.
Or our website has contact information as well as archive stories at wlrn.org. Click on Radio and the Public Storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
It's been a pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
Dr. Karen Neal is affiliate professor at Florida Atlantic University and a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.